Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo, tackling your stock-related questions this evening. Azwela Kemguni from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Thamsan Nganeta from Shiloh Capital. Don't forget to send us those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Mr. Mguni, Thamsan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, I mean, it's been an incredibly disappointing last five trading days, you know, if you count from Friday last week. So we basically were in the green in global markets all the way through to Friday. And from Friday to Wednesday, we wiped out all of those gains and ended up in the negative 4.6% on the NASDAQ and 4.2% in the S&P 500. What's happening in markets, Mr. Mguni?
I laugh because I think there was a lot of optimism in the market that wasn't really justified. I mean,
and you are very bearish for some reason.
Yeah, I am. I am, but I'm excited as things like these happen when the markets are falling because it gives us opportunities. I think what is key is if you look at what is happening in the global economy? You've got Europe. I mean, Europe is going to go into a recession. There's no doubt about it. Putin has just completely cut off gas to Europe. And some industries, the transportation industry, for example, in Germany, it's about operates on half of gas. And that industry is going to collapse. You're going to have difficulty in mobility in Europe, and that will affect the economy. The second thing is that if you look at Asia, I mean, China, the big growth engine there, is also under pressure with COVID lockdowns that have been repeated, and they are not able to produce and export. And then you're left with the U.S., where the rate hikes are being ramped up. We're starting to see some of the companies that are raising rates, that are actually cutting jobs. So I think the global economy is probably headed for a difficult period, and that is where the disconnect was between the market being optimistic and having high earnings expectations versus what was happening on the ground. So I think it's all justified, and I'm quite excited.
You're quite excited. I like that. But I don't like the fact that, you know, China announced that second largest, COVID curb. I mean, Chengdu or the metropolis of Chengdu is the second largest, with 21 million people in there that are now going to be, you know, immobile 100%, and, you know, in efforts to basically curb COVID. And someone asked this morning, when is it going to end? Look, it was first Shanghai in the first two quarters, and now we're here in Chengdu. So I don't know. Thamsan, are your thoughts on where we are currently? I mean, for you, I'll put this one to you. I mean, the local markets were up about 2%. For the month of August, not as bad as the 4.6 down on the NASDAQ and the 4.2 down on the S&P 500. But, I mean, we gave all of that away today alone. So, now what?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of what Mr. Mguni has said that I agree with. I think the macro story is supply shocks that are going to take some time to come into effect, especially around energy and as well as goods and services that are now offshored and made in regions of the world that are not Western. So once you cut off areas like Russia and China from the global market, then supply side shocks start coming through. You have supply shocks in coal, in uranium. You'll have supply shocks in goods that are being sold across the world. And we're seeing the effects of that. The second part is we're seeing the dependence of Europe on Russia. I think they underestimated what it would take to be able to combat a scenario in which Russia is excluded from supplying them. The third is that now oil can be bought or, I guess, settled in CNY. That also provides a huge supply shock, especially to reserve currencies, where countries can buy oil at huge discounts, especially countries like India, and settled in CNY. And then I think the fourth and most important part is commodity prices on our end. We are a large commodity market,
yeah,
and how the world perceives and procures our commodities makes a difference. What's happening in the U.S. is largely a repricing. Interest rates going up, stock markets and investors are repricing future value of companies, and that is coming with a huge correction alongside inflation, which most people thought was demand-side inflation, but as we've been crying and yelling about it, it's a supply-side issue, and those are harder to solve than just simple interest rate hikes.
Yeah, I mean, you can only do so much. You can control the services industry with interest rates, you know, manipulation, but you can't really, you know, control hard manufacturing and supply chain, unfortunately. So this is a new problem that's on our feet, and we should see what's going to happen there. But what I've gathered from what you said, Tam Sadler, is that you're very bullish on local commodity stocks without using many words, which I like as a South African. Anything that's good for the blue collar is good for me. So I like that. It's good for jobs. Also, it's good for the country. Maybe eventually it'll be good for the economy. Very bullish on SA. Let's jump into our questions. We have one here on SMS which says, is Coronation not a good stock to part one's money in these uncertain times? This is from Barry. So I think he wants to sell his Coronation. I mean, why would you do that? It has a dividend yield of infinity at this point. Mr. Mguni?
Yeah, look, I think it's probably too late to sell it now. I mean, it's down probably 30-something percent year to date. And I think, as you say, I mean, it's a dividend-paying stock. It's quite geared to the market, and I think stocks tend to recover ahead of the actual economy. So you're probably going to go into a bad patch in the next two quarters, and then things would start improving as the market looks ahead rather than actually waiting for the actual GDP improvement. So I'll certainly say that given their equity exposure, they might be one of the early beneficiaries when things turn. But to sell it now, I mean, I'm probably too late, and the yield is quite attractive.
Tam Sang is super bullish on Coronation, so I want to hear his thoughts. Any change there?
I think I'm bullish on the sector especially. I think the fee structures that 91, Nellin Grey, Coronation and the likes have in South Africa are quite great revenue generators. I also think if you are looking for dividend yield, these sort of stocks are the best to buy. They consistently pay out a great dividend. I wouldn't necessarily look at Coronation as a value play, but it's definitely a great dividend play.
Okay, I like that. Great dividend play on Coronation. We have a question here about Alibaba and other ADRs that are listed, you know, Hong Kong or Chinese companies that are listed in the U.S. It says, do you think the Chinese regulator will adhere to the SEC's audit regulations needed in order for those companies to retain their listings in America? I mean, JD.com might be an ADR, but Alibaba specifically is not an ADR. It's actually a direct listing in the New York Stock Exchange. Most of those education companies, some of them are listed directly in the NASDAQ or NYSE. Some of them are ADRs. So it's a good question, because there's a lot of developments coming out from Monday, this past Monday. Yeah, Mr. Mguni?
Yeah, look, I don't think they can afford, I mean, the Chinese regulators can afford not to cooperate. I mean, the shock, if you think about the alternative to those companies being delisted in the U.S., firstly, you destroy a lot of value, and you'd need capital to buy out the other shareholders that you'd be kicking out of the books. So I certainly think that they have no option but to comply. Hence, on Monday, they agreed on the U.S. Audit regulator having access to the audit reports from the Chinese company. So it looks like there'll be a two-layered audit process, and certainly it would cost a bit, but it's cheaper than losing your listing on the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah, but I mean, if you compared that, you know, that little burden of having two sets of auditors as compared to the value lost in the past, you know, 2 to 3 years, and something like an Alibaba or a JD.com or even a Tencent, it's not worth it. You know what I mean? You might want to take the temporary pain to see a little bit of upside. I know you particularly follow this sector quite closely, Tamsanga. So what are your thoughts?
It's now political football, to be honest. It's now about relations between the two countries and how they view each other. China is not like other countries. They could put up the money and delist the thing if they wanted to and privatize it tomorrow or withdraw certain licenses that will tank the stock and so on and so forth. They could do that. But I think global relations require that as much as they would not want these companies to go under foreign scrutiny, that they maintain some level of foreign relations with the United States. They now have a symbiotic relationship and they need each other. So I think it's important that they maintain that. It's got nothing to do with the economics of Alibaba or JD Group. It's now really down to the politics between the two very, very large countries. As they say, when two elephants fight, it's the grass that suffers. JD Group and Alibaba are that grass.
And we've suffered enough, to say the least. I think we're going to keep getting this old mutual question every single day for some reason until we actually, you know, get to a resolution from the board or something, or an answer from the board, or a written letter from Mr. Williamson himself, it seems. So this one is from Derek Harris, who says, the old mutual share price took quite a knock since the Triple B Ebulatila share scheme was announced. Is it still worth to buy in as the discount is nearly wiped out? So obviously when it was announced, it was around 14 rands, 13 rands. The discount was the equivalent of, you know, I don't know, 20%. But now this thing was announced at 10 rands. The share price of Old Mutual is trading at 10 rands. And Mr. Mguni, your thoughts? I mean, I don't want to buy an equity and be locked in for 10 years where I could just go directly and buy the shares of Old Mutual with, you know, better liquidity and, you know, better economics. And I get 100% on my close to 13% dividend rather than, you know, taking this thing that's going to start off with a lot of debt at the beginning. And I'm not even sure at the end of the 10 years I'll make a lot of money anyways. So I don't know, I'd rather take the risk off the top where there's a little bit of quote-unquote certainty, even though we know there's no certainty in markets. But at least I have, you know, the control of liquidity.
You know, look, I think first of all, one has to look at why Old Mutual has to do this. I mean, they need to improve their PE scorecard.
Yep.
And I think that is key. I think the second thing is that they obviously pitched the stock, or at least the offer to BE shareholders at a price that they thought was a discount to what was the price then. And that discount seems to have been wiped out almost instantaneously. So they might have to do something else. But I think for people who can put a little bit of capital and then allow the dividends to pay off the debt, I think might be an attractive structure. I certainly think that they made it wide open. I mean, from people, I think they said from 100 rand accessibility. So it might maybe create a lot of excitement in the market. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. If we close the market today, I'll take the listed price rather than the BE share.
Yeah, I mean, the structure, look, don't get the structure wrong. The structure is very favorable, and I'm not saying people shouldn't participate in the scheme. Still think it's very favorable. I haven't seen terms this generous in a very long time. But you know, the discount now, the issue is now on the discount. I think the board and whoever made the deal or presented it to the board made a big mistake by giving it an actual price using the share price, when they could have said, you know, in the last 30 days of the deal being struck, we will use the, you know, 20% of VWAP or, you know, as a discount rather than actually giving a share price. Because now arbitrage guys are going to chase this thing to the floor. If they come back, you know, with another discount of 20% and say, whatever, it's 8 rands, it's going to go to 8 rands. It's a loser's game at this point. So I don't see them winning that game. Anyways, Tamsanga, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a case of poor corporate communication. you've basically communicated to the wrong people what you're trying to do. You're trying to create a participation for previously disadvantaged individuals, but yet you've communicated to, as you said, up traders that they can short the stock down to a particular price. So I think what is most likely to happen is there will be a new announcement or a new presentation to the board and a new announcement that lines up with what you're saying, where they'll reprice it and then use the view app or some other similar sort of pricing to communicate to the market. I think it's a lesson for all of us when we speak about structures or anything related to market communication. We must ensure that we communicate to the right people to get them to buy into this to the BEE schemes, rightfully so. They are addressing a key economic issue in the country, and not communicate to the up traders who now have an advantage and can short a very liquid stock down to a price that is the discount.
I'd like to add that, I mean, given that they are funding, let's say, 90% of the price, the purchase price, why do they need to go back and reprice? I mean, you could say, well, I gave you a good price.
Generous structure, yeah. That's why I'm saying it's still a very generous structure, but...
It's a general structure.
Yeah, but, you know, price sensitivity, we need to be cognizant of that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but...
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but then...
So my thing is, who are you talking to? So even if you say, look, let's not renegotiate it, at the end of the day, you are speaking to guys who have the capital to make that play. So I'm also with Bright. I don't disagree on the structure. It's brilliant, actually. It's
brilliant structure.
What I am saying is that the market signals... we're now playing Alan Greenspan games, where people try to predict what he would say at his announcements. But what you're signaling to the market is important, especially as the one who's going to fund the scheme on behalf of previously disadvantaged individuals.
Yeah, and talking about the gearing, which is 85%, Mr. Mgun, well, it's not 85% because the other 15% is shares. So it's about 70%. It'll be underwater for quite some time if they do go ahead at $10. You know, it doesn't make sense, really. So that's for structuring purposes. Which bank is going to say yes to that?
I think normally, I mean, what the banks do is they would put in a clause that says, how are you going to guarantee this? So either you have to put in
generous dividend. Yeah.
Dividend payout ratio that says you'd be able to cover that entire thing over time. So I think the fact that the big banks might get involved in funding this, I think would probably make it quite attractive for the investors. I mean, okay. Remember how Sasol structured theirs years ago, and that thing was paid within the time frame that was set by the banks.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. Let's move on. Onalina on Twitter says, why does Hyprop trade at such a higher earnings multiple, relative to its competitors, Vugile / GrowthPoint? He's had an extensive look at Hyprop, and you can't see where such growth is going to come from. I mean, obviously, this guy is well-versed in analyzing property companies, REITs in particular. I agree with him. You know, it's Hyprop is not cheap. And it's recovered quite nicely post-COVID. And my answer was, it's because they've got the best mall. I only said that because I go to that mall, not really because they've got the best mall in the world. But if they want someone in their marketing, I'm available. Mr. Nguni. Mr. Nguni.
Right.
Mr. Nguni, I want to hear your thoughts.
Look. I don't think you want to look at it on a price multiple. I think you have to look at it on a price to earnings multiple. I think you have to look at it on a price to book basis. And certainly the cap rates have gone up and some of these things, the valuations are actually, you know, they've come down. But I think that if you look at the price to book, they're telling it about 60% of book. And I think that while they've had their fair share of problems, including leverage, operations in Africa, that didn't work out so well. They've worked so hard to try and clean up that business. So I think at 0.6 times book, I mean, it's probably not too bad, but there may be a bit of pain coming in the next year or so. But in the long term, once things stabilize, I think you might be in a good position here.
Okay. Samsung, we're running out of time here. Let's talk about Aspen, which is Jonathan Governor is asking us what's the panel's view on Aspen for the next 12 months. He liked the encouraging presentation he saw today from management. I mean, if you've been to any Aspen, management presentation, you come back there, worshiping at their altar. So I don't know, man. I personally stopped going because I was drinking the Kool-Aid too much. It was messing with my analysis skills. So it's rather easier to speak to other asset managers than speak to management, really, if we're being honest. What do you think, Tamsang?
With all shares, you must always look at the numbers. I think I agree with you. The management team, they can really communicate a story and a narrative really well. I think they are in an industry which has been in the center of attention for quite a while since COVID. I'm not sure where the future growth will come from. And as well as understanding that they operate in a particular, a highly regulated in a particular market, that will continue to be scrutinized, especially around, what they do going forward with their product. They do have great management, but, it's not necessarily a share I would put in my portfolio right now. Largely not because of the quality of management, but because I don't see where the future of healthcare and pharma will come from post this boom of COVID.
Yeah, look, he's made a good points there, Mr. Mguni, and the fact that global these type of healthcare biopharma stocks have got bigger pockets. They can fund, studies easily, whereas these guys are just manufacturers in the background. The question for me to you is that, they've grown through acquisitions and that didn't work out. Obviously, the market liked them for some time and didn't like them when they found out that these businesses are not as profitable as the story we've been told in every year in every presentation. So now what, Mr. Mguni?
Look, I don't want to upset management furthermore than what I've already done. I would like to say, I think the story of acquisitions, I mean, that was a bad decision. It hasn't worked out, as you say. I think where they are now, they've had a massive expansion of their manufacturing capacity, and then they lost a number of contracts that they were using to get the operating leverage from there.
Yeah.
They then got the COVID in, and that didn't work out so well. So these new products are hopefully going to help them increase capacity utilization, because that manufacturing side is running below capacity. That is the only lever that I can see that is going to be meaningful in their lives. If the market on the other side, or the demand for the products that they just got licensed for, is actually there. Because if it's not there, you can get a license, problem. As we saw with COVID, then you're going to have problems.
You know, we sound very bearish on Aspen, all of us, or healthcare in general. You'd swear like we never get sick or something. Mr. Mguni, I'll start with you. It's the moment of truth. Stock pick?
Yeah, I went with Oracle. So Oracle is a software business that has been around for quite some time, survived the dot-com bubble burst 2008. And it's essentially focused on things like middleware, operating systems, and they are actually quite focused in the smaller to medium enterprises. And they've had quite a bad 2021, and they're looking to cut costs by about $1 billion. So it looks like also management is responding to some of the governance issues. They're separating the CEO, chairman role. They are adding more independent directors. So it looks like, I mean, they are headed in the right direction in terms of the steps that they're taking. There's going to be a downturn, but they'll probably come out of that downturn stronger. They are trading probably 14 times forward. So I think long term, it would be a good story.
So they're separating the CEO and chairman role, and is giving the CEO role to his daughter, obviously. So you're betting on nepotism. Tamsang, what's your stock pick for
this? They said they're independent.
Pinduo Duo is my stock. It's a Chinese agri-tech stock. It's a platform where farmers and the market meet. And I think if you've got a billion people who need food and you've got many SMEs that have a platform to sell that food to manufacturers, producers, you're going to do well.
Yeah, this has been an
incredible...
Yeah, no, it's a Pindondu is, or whatever you pronounce it. It's been an incredible story. And I mean, because of, you know, the fight that we were talking about between the two countries, it's been one of those stocks that's been hit. So this might be a good entry price, actually. I like that. So Pindondu for Tamsanga and Oracle, you know, a company that's run by a man who owns an entire island. Oracle and his daughter. So that's the company you like. Okay, so Oracle and Pindondu. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks to my guests, Zwela Kimguni from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Tamsanga Netta from Shiloh Capital. Do join Zinati for the Friday edition of Stockwatch and send those questions during the day via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. The show airs live at 19:30. Have a good evening and have a good weekend.